Christopher Hitchens has long been considered one of the standard bearers of what's been called the new atheism. In print, public lectures and television, he sought to eviscerate religion and religious thinkers of all types. Yet, strange as it may seem, in his frequent debates across the United States, Christopher Hitchens developed what became a close friendship with one of his most tireless adversaries, an evangelical Christian, Larry Alex Taunton. Such was the friendship that in the last years of his life, as the cancer that killed him took hold, Hitchens spent many hours on the road with our guest, Larry Taunton. Larry, welcome to Sunday Nights.
Thanks for having me.
Now, Larry, you've just published a book on your travels with Christopher, provocatively titled The Faith of Christopher Hitchens. I'm sure Christopher would love that.
Well, yes, it is. What I'm getting at in that title is, and of course, the complete title is The Faith of Christopher Hitchens, The Restless Soul of the World's Most Notorious Atheist. So the complete title makes clear I don't think Christopher Hitchens was a religious convert. But there is this assumption on the part of the new atheists, the constant accusation that it's only religious people who have faith. And, of course, that's just sheer nonsense. We're all betting on something. Now, in this country, it might be Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump or the stock market or God, but we're all wagering in the Pascalian wager.
You traveled with Christopher, particularly in the last couple of years of his life, on one or two long journeys. Just give us a brief overview of your relationship with Christopher, how it developed, and the sort of travels you went on.
Yes, I met Christopher at the Edinburgh International Festival in Edinburgh, Scotland, and I was sure he would hate me. I mean, here I am, a Southern evangelical Christian, and I was pretty sure I wouldn't like him. I'd read his book, God is Not Great, How Religion Poisons Everything, and you don't have to have read much of it to guess at its thesis. And I expected the man to match the book. The book was a tirade, and yet when I met Christopher, I liked him. And over the course of the next few years, that would culminate in a couple of road trips that we would take together. And those would be trips that we would take from his home in D.C. To mine in Birmingham, Alabama, and another one through Yellowstone National Park. And you have to picture it, John. Here he is, got a Johnny Walker Scotch, black, label squeezed between his knees, his reading glasses on the end of his nose, and he's reading aloud from the Gospel of John that we're studying because I challenged him to a Bible study. It was fascinating stuff.
Now, these road trips also had locations in mind. That is, it wasn't only the scenery of Yellowstone. You were on your way to engagements at which you would stand on opposite the sides of the stage and debate each other.
That's right. And so, what people didn't see, and what I'm giving people a glimpse of in this book, The Faith of Christopher Hitchens, is I'm giving them a glimpse of the Christopher off the stage. Whether you're an atheist or a Christian, you love this book. I mean, Christopher wasn't always what he seemed to be. He might be railing against religion or religious people and lump them all together as evil and insidious. But, off the stage, Christopher was very warm, and I enjoyed my relationship with him, the road trips I had the opportunity to take with him, and it was fascinating stuff.
This, in fact, is one of the main theses of your book, that there are two Hitchens personas, not only in the conventional sense a public performance persona and a private persona, but you suggest it's far stronger than this with Hitchens, that he really did have a compartmentalized life.
Well, I actually am not the first to suggest it. Christopher suggested it. The metaphor, two books, I have a chapter in the book called Two Books, is not a metaphor that I invented. It's not one that Christopher invented, but it's one that he used liberally in reference to himself. And the metaphor itself is a reference to a kind of fraudulent bookkeeping, that there's the public record, but to really know what's going on, you have to see the private books. And Christopher spoke of himself as a divided self. And he said, we're all divided, but it's particularly strong in my case. And so, other authors have also noted this about Christopher. And Christopher was quite open about the tension between these two books that he tried to keep alive, in some sense, contradictory ideas.
you spell that out over a number of pages, but at the centre of it, you come back to his that in some ways it was shaped by his upbringing, by tension at the heart of his family life.
Yes, his father was a career naval officer, the commander, as he referred to him, and he was raised a strict Calvinist, but according to Peter, Christopher's younger brother, who was at one time also an atheist and a communist like Christopher, but later became a Christian, he said that that the best he could deduce was that their father was an agnostic. Their mother, Yvonne, was later discovered after she died that she was actually of Jewish descent, but she never voiced any real religious opinion. And so it seems that Christopher was raised in this in a Britain where neither his parents took religion seriously, nor the culture in which he was raised. In other words, the religion was more a fabric of society and of state than it was about a relationship with Jesus Christ or the Bible. And Christopher, I think, quite rightly rejected this. Unfortunately, I think he came up with the wrong answer, the wrong thing to fill that vacuum.
You paint a picture of Hitchens almost typical of a generation that grew up or matured in the early to late 60s, that is, an angry young man of the left, and that this anger pervaded much of his public interaction.
Yes, it did. Christopher, anybody who's read Christopher Hitchens knows that he wrote beautifully, but anybody who's read much of Christopher Hitchens also knows that he could be something of an Ivan Drago, if you will, of a journalist. I mean, he could be a real bully. He could be mean, even evil in some of the things that he might say, both in written and spoken word. And this began early on in Christopher's career, and it characterized much of his career. And it was one of the things that sort of, made him stand out from many others on the left and was part of an effective marketing strategy for him.
What is it about his childhood and adolescence that fuels the anger?
Well, on this we're really speculating, but let me just say this. Christopher had in common, his atheism, that is, had much in common with other atheists, meaning a father who in some sense was weak or absentee, at least in Christopher's case, in disciplining his son. His father had been the product of a strict Edwardian upbringing, and it seems that he went very far the other way and was far too tolerant of Christopher's behavior. Christopher also declared himself an atheist at an age that is also fairly common. And what I find very interesting about Christopher's atheism is that he, like just about any atheist I've ever met, claimed to have become one for strictly rational and scientific reasons. But it was at the age of 10, that Christopher made this declaration. It was the age of 15 in 1964 that he burned his Bible and declared himself an atheist. And I dare say that most 15-year-olds are not especially scientific and research-oriented in exploring and understanding these kinds of great questions. Yet Christopher says that he was.
This is somebody who develops into not just somebody who disbelieves, but somebody who believes they need to attack belief. That is, that belief in some
Indeed.
Ways is destructive of the project of civilization.
Now, I make a distinction between what I call cultural atheists and philosophical atheists. It's a somewhat arbitrary name designation, but what I mean by it is this, that a cultural atheist is somebody who, when you ask them whether or not they believe in God, they maybe stop for a moment and think and say, I don't think so. But they're not readers of Dawkins or Hitchens or anything like that. On the other hand, there are those who are ideologically driven, and atheism comes to define their life. And this was the case with Christopher. Atheism defined much of his life. Now, I maintain that it didn't ultimately define his life in the last decade, but it certainly did throughout most of his life. And Christopher had a hatred for God, he had a hatred for religion, and he had a hatred for religious people throughout most of his life.
And this led, of course, to him being associated with what's called the New Atheism, with Richard Dawkins and Daniel Dennett and others. Yet even here, his relationship was at times contentious.
Yes, you know, Christopher, you know, I debated Dennett. I know Richard Dawkins reasonably well. He was kind enough to have me in his home fairly recently for coffee. I've never met Harris, but my sense of reading his books is that those three, Dennett, Dawkins, and Harris, are all very ideologically driven. By the time that Christopher had become part of this foursome, known as the horseman of the counter-apocalypse, Christopher's attitudes were changing somewhat. Yes, he still spoke of himself as part of the movement. He still spoke very proudly of his atheism. But Christopher had already by that time changed sides from the left. That is, after 2001, after 9/11 occurred, Christopher defected from the left politically and began attacking the left politically. Former friends he attacked, and those former friends became enemies. And Christopher, with the publication of God Is Not Great in 2007, which became a bestseller, Christopher began engaging with religious people, mostly evangelicals. And he discovered that in some cases, he liked them very much. This is how I came to know Christopher Hitchens. And this set Christopher apart from some of the other new atheists.
You're on Sunday nights on ABC Radio around Australia through Radio Australia and via the web to the world. John Cleary with you. We're talking with Larry Alex Taunton, author of The Faith of Christopher Hitchens, a new book about to be released in your bookstores, and you can chase around and find a copy if you wish. Larry Alex Taunton, Christopher always had a bright and ironic side. Love of music too, and you reflect on that in your book. Let's have one of those tunes that you and Christopher probably shared as you went on your journey across that vast continent, the United States. Knock, knock, knocking on heaven's door. It's Dylan.
That long black cloud is coming down. I feel I'm knocking on heaven's door. Knock, knock, knocking on heaven's door.
Dylan, knocking on heaven's door, our guest Larry Alex Taunton, the author of The Faith of Christopher Hitchens. That music, somewhat symbolic of your travels, Larry?
Well, it wasn't one that I recall actually being played on our road trips, but it was played at his memorial service, and it was a favorite of his. And Christopher was certainly a product of the 60s in terms of his music taste. Readers of this book will get a charge out of a story I tell as we're driving through Yellowstone National Park. We were driving a vehicle that my boys and their friends had been driving the day before, and so there are these CDs, a CD case in there, and Christopher begins flipping through them, and he sees Coldplay, no. Land Before Time soundtrack, no. He sees, you know, I don't know, ELO or something like that, no. But then he sees a Simon and Garfunkel CD, and he pulls it out, sticks it into the dash, reclines the seat, closes his eyes, and begins to sing along. And he asked me if I was a Simon and Garfunkel fan, and I told him not especially. And he said, you know, I think I have a memory to go with every one of these songs. And, this was Christopher Hitchens away from the stage. Classic.
The two personas of Hitchens you referred to earlier, marked in some cases by a self-destructive side as well, the alcohol and cigarettes.
Most definitely.
Almost obsessive with him.
Yes. Well, as I mentioned before, you know, Christopher, even as we were having a Bible study together, he was drinking his Johnny Walker Black. You know, I don't have any Bible studies you've attended where in addition to the coffee and donuts, whiskey is on offer, but this was my first. Christopher's father had died of esophageal cancer, which is often brought on by, you know, smoking and alcohol, heavy alcohol, in you know, to excess. And Christopher himself, he lived like this. You seldom saw Christopher that he wasn't drinking and that he wasn't smoking. He could go for a very short period of time without smoking. And of course, he himself ultimately died of esophageal cancer, just as his father had.
You mentioned his break with the left over the 2001 and the subsequent Iraq War, in which he supported the Bush administration. Of course, for many on the left of the 60s, this closely followed on the failure of communism, the fall of the Berlin Wall in 1989, and others on the left at that side went through a similar experience of Christopher, perhaps not so largely written, but you read of many on the left who moved to the right. And it's been commented that there is a certain true believer mentality operating here, that these are people who, many of them very intelligent, who had a great concern for the nature of the world, for the order of the world, and if one set of beliefs wasn't going to fit, they had to get another set of beliefs. So you had a... And these weren't necessarily religious. We're talking about quite secular beliefs. But the true believer phenomenon seems to almost fit the Hitchens model, if you want to paint it that way.
Yeah, well, you're so right, John. I mean, Christopher, let's take the issue that was really the straw that broke the camel's back for him. It was Islam. And you see the narrative of the left, the knee-jerk reaction of the left, has always been that America deserved what it got on 9/11, and that it is responsible for most of the world's evils. That America is an evil place and an evil influence in the world, rather than a benevolent and goodly one. After 9/11, Christopher decided he just simply couldn't go along with this anymore. You know, Noam Chomsky and others, you know, they said what you knew they were going to say. Well, these are the chickens, you know, coming home to roost. I mean, this is what you get if you're America. And Christopher decided, no, I can't go along with that. America did not deserve this. America is a goodly influence. So he wrote an article for Slate magazine called Simply Evil. And Christopher chose his words very carefully. He was too good a writer to do otherwise. I mean, the word evil, of course, has strong theological, you know, overtones and meaning. And Christopher was, in that article, he states, effectively, I'm abandoning the leftist narrative because I can no longer go along with this, and I now put myself on the side of the soldiers and the cops, to quote him. And in so doing, he, of course, made many enemies.
This transition also, you indicate, marks the beginning of a more comfortable relationship with people whom he'd previously disagreed, and this began to include religious people, of whom you are one. How did this begin to open up for you? You meet him in the context of debates, but you soon find a man who's willing to probe beneath the surface level of public polemics.
Yeah, I think for me, John, it happened unexpectedly. I can't speak for whether or not friendship was. I think it was a bit of a surprise for Christopher too, but I speculate on that point, but. I think that where Christopher and I found common ground was that we are both children of the military. My father was a career soldier. His father was career Navy. That infuses you with certain ideals that remain with you for life, and they're good ones. We both loved literature. Neither of us liked small talk. And we like lively, you know, meaningful discussion. And these were things that characterized our relationship.
You've mentioned twice in this interview the fact that you had a Bible study on the book of John.
Yes.
Are you pushing this towards the idea that Christopher was entertaining the belief in a higher power seriously, or that he was engaged in something else, an exploration of belief as an object of study?
Both, I think, were at work here. First of all, I don't think Christopher was exploring religious conversion at the time that I suggested it. I think he accepted to do a Bible study with me because I challenged him to it, and Christopher was determined, not to let the challenge, go unmet. We were sitting around in some restaurant some night, and he was saying, as he often did, particularly when he got liquored up, some outrageous things about Christianity and the Bible. And I just said, Christopher, there you go again, saying all kinds of things that just simply aren't true. I don't think you actually know the Bible. I think you've cherry-picked it, but I don't think you've actually ever read it, studied it thoughtfully. I don't think you understand it. So I challenge you to a study of the Gospel of John. We'll go through it together, and it won't be my opinion or your opinion. We'll just ask ourselves, does the author seem credible? Does he really seem like he's a nutcase, or does he seem like a credible witness? And so Christopher, agreed to it, and this was in fun. And so on our first road trip together, we studied the Bible, I'd say at least 4 hours. And but it was during that road trip that I think Christopher, something had changed. From the time that I first challenged him to it to the time we actually did it, something had changed. Christopher had been diagnosed with cancer. He was dying. He knew he was doomed. And so I think Christopher, was exploring his various options. He knew that you couldn't build a worldview around the negative, the atheism. He knew that it was an insufficient worldview to provide a system of thought and understanding for life, which Christopher was looking for. And so I think Christopher was exploring religious options, but do I think he ever actually dropped anchor in one? I the answer is no.
Perhaps from my observation, the most one could say about Christopher, it came in a Pew Forum discussion that he did have with his brother, Peter, who is a Christian, and it was quite remarkable, and he acknowledged his debt to George Orwell in this, and he said in that discussion, over the last century, Christendom has swept itself away in two disastrous world wars, but I'm not sure yet we have found anything that can replace it. And that's essentially what he was looking for, was it not?
A utopia. Christopher often said that he, he loved to quote Oscar Wilde, who said that a map of the world without utopia on it wasn't worth consulting. Christopher was a hopeless romantic. This again is something that set him aside, apart from some of his other new atheists. Christopher was looking for something that made life worth living. And atheism isn't it.
And in the end, he acknowledges that there is a gap, but he is not sure what fills that gap.
Yeah, I don't think he ever found it. I don't think Christopher ever found something to fill that gap for himself or for his life, though he was looking for it. And, there are too many who went before him, gone before him, who were, of course, exploring these kinds of questions, too. And your options are fairly limited, really. I mean, you have a religious options and you have your non-religious options. And I think science was something he was also exploring, and he was also deeply affected by the discovery late in life that his mother was Jewish.
Larry Alex Taunton, we're nearly out of time. Some may criticise the book you write as pushing the argument a little too far, and you're aware of that. You quote the famous deathbed conversion stories, the most famous, of course, being the Lady Hope story of Charles Darwin, which James Moore dealt with in a terrific book a few years ago, and you do take care not to push Hitchens in that direction.
Well, in fact... I take a special care not to go in that direction, because I refer to Lady Hope as someone who made a false claim of a deathbed conversion, and then I say that I make no Lady Hope-like claims regarding Christopher Hitchens. I should say this about the critics of this book. Not a single critic of this book has thus far been a reader of this book. You know, the book list, which is secular, gave a beautiful review of this book, called it lively and loving. Furthermore, you know, Chris Matthews of MSNBC, very prominent talk show host here, certainly if not of my ideological stripe, I called this book a beautiful book. And it's been compared by the Gospel Coalition, made a comparison to mere Christianity. So, you know, left, and right, and center have received this book very well. It is, unfortunately, the trolls on the Internet who are foaming at the mouth at the mere thought that a man at whose altar they worship was maybe less confident in his atheism than they would like to believe, has sent many of them into a furor. But it hasn't been people who are actually reading the book.
Larry Alex Taunton, it's been great to speak with you. We've taken up
too
much of your time. Let's finish with a piece of music that you and Christopher did share, I believe, on that road trip, Higher Love.
There you go. Yeah, Steve Winwood's Higher Love is a song that was also played at Christopher's memorial service. But it's a song that he readily acknowledged had evangelical overtones, and he told my son that he truly did long for a higher love. And I think this says a lot about Christopher. We all do.
Larry Alex Taunton, thanks so much for joining us on Sunday Night.
Thank you.
Steve Winwood there, the choice of Larry Alex Taunton and perhaps even Christopher Hitchens. And Larry is the author of The Faith of Christopher Hitchens. This has been a podcast of Sunday Nights on ABC Local Radio. Thank you for listening.